Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, April 21st, 2024. My name is Melanie C., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater calling in from Canby, Oregon this morning. It's dark outside. The share ID numbers for Friday, April 19th, 2024, are the following. The share ID number for the 7 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study is 21330, 21,330. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study, share ID number is 21331, 21,331. This morning, A Vision for You presents Continuing the Maintenance. Today, we have come together to hear one person's experience of maintaining an enlarging relationship with power. As a recovered compulsive overeater, this ensures growth, change, and continued transformation. It is my great pleasure to introduce our distinguished guest speaker, who will be sharing insights on the topic of continuing the maintenance. We have all experienced the low blows and harsh realities that come with a journey of addiction and recovery from compulsive overeating, especially when confronting the truth of being a compulsive overeater, right? But through our struggles, we've come to a simple yet profound realization. We cannot manage our lives, our behaviors, our addictions on our own. We are without power. Yet in the quest for healing and wholeness, we have discovered a source of power greater than ourselves, a power that transcends our limitations and offers us hope and renewal. This power, as many of us have come to understand, is found in forging a relationship with that higher power through the 12 steps of AA for compulsive overeaters. Step 10 serves as a crucial tool for maintaining and nurturing this relationship. It is the fire hose that clears away the debris of our old ways and realigns us with the power that guides us towards recovery. Through daily inventory and reflection of the heart, we learn to recognize when we are off balance, when something has gone sideways, and when we need to realign ourselves with the path of recovery. This process of maintenance is about more than just staying sober or abstinent. It's about finding balance in our emotions, relationships, thinking, and behavior so that we can continue to access this power that sustains us. It's about clearing away the wreckage of our past or the present, and embracing a new way of living that brings us abundant joy and prosperity of heart and soul. As we embark on this journey of daily renewal, we find freedom from the shackles of our addiction and a newfound sense of purpose and fulfillment. And we do it together, supporting and uplifting one another as we stay turned toward the sunlight of recovery. Please join me in welcoming our speaker as she shares her wisdom and insights on continuing the journey of maintenance and embracing the real deal of recovery. You know this precious fellow member of A Vision for You very well. She is among those that continue to share and support and attend to those still suffering, and she does so willingly and happily, telling the truth and transferring hope and joy along the way. Please join me in extending a good, solid, warm welcome to Katie G. from Boston. Welcome, welcome to you, Katie.
Hi, excuse me. Good morning, Melanie. What a beautiful introduction. Thank you so much. And good morning, everyone. My name is Katie G, and I'm a recovered compulsive eater. I also have suffered from anorexia and bulimia and exercise addiction. I say I'm recovered not to be falsely humble, but because it's true. I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, which means that I do not suffer from compulsive eating, anorexia, and bulimia, but I will always be a compulsive eater. A couple things. When we get to step 10, I'm going to make a couple assumptions that if you're listening right now, I'm probably not going to go into a lot of the nitty-gritty of how to do a step 10. I've had a couple spiritual awakenings that I'd like to share along the way of what an inventory is. So if you're not on step 10, my loving suggestion is just to listen and take in what may or may not be applicable to you. I guess what I wanted to do is start by qualifying. No, I wanted to Excuse me, I'm a little nervous. I wanted to start by praying. I am the place where God shines through. Him and I are one, not two. I need not worry, fret, or plan. He wants me where and as I am. And if I be relaxed and free, He'll carry out His plans through me. All right, I just lost my notes. So just a little bit to let you know why I get my seat in Overeaters Anonymous. My first memories are not of compulsive eating, anorexia, or bulimia of any kind. My first memories are of feeling like I didn't fit in my skin. I felt like I should be somebody else, doing something else with some other people at some other time. As I like to say, I needed like a hot fudge sundae on the way to kindergarten. I really believed that food was my problem throughout my life. I believed that if I could just not be fat, I would be okay. What I've learned in the rooms is that food and my body weight is not my problem. It's the solution that I applied to my problems. My problem is life. I don't do well with human relationships, and I don't do well in life. In fact, what the bedevilments tell me is that I have trouble with personal relations. I can't control my emotional nature. I'm prey to misery and depression. I can't make a living. I have a feeling of uselessness. What was really confusing for me for a long time is that I thought I only lived in the bedevilments when I was not abstinent. I thought that food and anorexia and bulimia caused having trouble with personal relations, being miserable and depressed. But what I've learned is that the disease of alcoholism, and I say alcoholism because it's like easier to understand than foodism, because that's like not a thing I've ever heard. So that I have alcoholism, not wasm. And so over any period of time, my disease is always getting worse. And with, coming to learn to live in life, I need to learn how to live in life. So today's talk, like I said, will be focused on inventory once recovered. I've been in the rooms of OA for 20 years. My stats, which don't really have, I've been 228 pounds. I've also been 110 pounds. I have done that through anorexia, compulsive overeating, and compulsively exercising. Many of you know that I went into a severe postpartum depression that I managed by exercising and following a weight and measured food plan. I successfully lost 17 pounds, which I don't have to lose. And I did that in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, which is pretty tough. Today I'm going to focus on inventory once I'm recovered, and there's lots to review. One of my favorite quotes in the big book is, I get to be an agent for God. Like, how powerful is that? Once I'm recovered, like, I get to be an agent. And this morning I was thinking, but what does that really mean? So I used the dictionary. And so if I'm an agent for God, He is the principal. And what it talks about is one entity, so God, authorizes another to perform actions on their behalf. Principals provide instructions to agents and provide them with the agreed compensation. An agent's duties include acting in the principal's best interest and adhering to legal regulations, which is probably really important for me. So once I have had this spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, like I get directions. So while I choose my own conception of God, I very clearly get directions from God, from the big book, on how I'm supposed to live my life. I am meant to perform actions on God's behalf. And the reason for me I need to do step 10, well, one of them is because God gives me instructions and I don't like them, right? Like, I want to go do something for myself and God wants me to spend the day doing the laundry. or to be of service for my husband. I mean, I'm doing this talk today because I use step 10 because I don't always want to do, I'm just not that good of a person. I don't always want to do what God asked me to do. And by doing steps 4 through 9. And what happens is I now need to live a new life. So check this out. So God really blew my mind when I read the definition of maintenance. So in the big book, it talks about how we live this life contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And a couple ahas I had, because when I first read this, I was like, I don't get it. Like, you've made me do all this work, and now you want me to maintain? Like, that sounds really boring. So what was so powerful for me is that I read a definition that says maintenance makes possible for life to exist or continue. And that blows my mind because I'm in the world of the spirit with God. And I, first of all, this is not contingent on my spiritual condition. A lot, I thought that that was true. So I thought that I do this work contingent on my spiritual condition. So that doesn't require any work. It's maintenance. So I'm not an auto mechanic, but if you think about it, you know, doing an oil change or changing my tires or all that stuff that they have to put in the front of the car, the fluids. If I don't do that, I'm not making it possible for the car's life to exist or continue. And so if I'm not doing step 10, if I know I'm irritated and I'm not willing to do the work, I'm no longer making it possible for life to exist or continue. Why? Because the main problem of my disease is in my mind. And I don't get to be irritated today. That is the dubious luxury of normal men. So what happens to me is if I get a resentment, even if it's a quote-unquote small one, which the big book never talks about a small resentment, right? Or it's a vulnerable one. Like, how about resentments on my 3-year-old or my 2-year-old? Or my newborn baby. Like, those things aren't very fun to talk about. But if I don't, eating will be a step up from my thinking. Eating will be the relief that I need. So my job every day is to stay in touch with God in order to live in the new and wonderful world. So that maintenance first sort of awakening about step 10. So we're growing in understanding and effectiveness. Effectiveness is the degree to which something is successful in producing a desired result. So what's the result? I want to constantly be in connection with God. I mean, when I first came into the rooms, I would call people and say, how do you stay in constant connection with God? And I don't. It's like a sailboat, right? Like I'm sailing around and poof, the sail puffs out, right? And I got to gently pull it back in. What step 10 does for me is it helps me change from a victim to a responsible grown-up, right? It helps me pivot and learn what do these things do for me and not to me. So I love this step. I've seen a lot of change in my thinking. And another thing as to why I'm doing this, the main problem is in my mind and not my body. And also that the solution, as you remember earlier in the book, it says, almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings that this process requires for its successful consummation. So contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition, this process requires for its successful consummation. So there's a lot of work that's going to be involved, and thank God. So before I did this talk, I felt like I needed to prove to everyone that step 10 is the walking around step and 11 is a nightly review. It starts with nightly review. And I was like adamant. I did step 10s on those of you who call the nightly review a step 10. Just laying it out there because I was like, the big book says this and you're wrong. And I like to be right. I'm not going to lie. So, but I was working on this talk, and I was like, you know what? Something's lacking. God just put on my heart. So I went to the AA 12 and 12, and I had my mind blown, because the big book says it's the walking around step, absolutely. And nightly inventory starts at step 11, absolutely. But what's interesting is the step, the AA 12 and 12 talks about three kinds of inventories, and they base them on the time. So they talk about spot check inventory, which I was calling at the time very impatiently without love or tolerance, a step 10. They talk about a nightly review and an annual review. So the good news is I got to stay out of the controversy, and I see and understand why those of you who I thought were wrong are now right. And that, as my beautiful friend pointed out to me this morning, that right and wrong is not our code. It's love and tolerance, right? So I had a turn in consciousness reading the AA 12 and 12. I'm going to talk a lot about it today. I didn't realize how much powerful material's in there. And it provides a lot of information on how we grow in understanding and effectiveness. So I've experienced the promises of step 10. Step 10 talks about, I have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even food. I mean, think about that. Like, I don't fight anyone. I was born a fighter. I got into this world and I was like, excuse me, you're wrong, I'm right. And I don't really know where I got that idea. I just know that I needed to be right all the time. So I have experienced the promises of step 10. I honestly feel like they're the best promises in the book. We have, cease fighting anything or anyone. I've been placed in a position of neutrality. Like, I get ice cream on my face. The other day, or this morning, I went to kiss my daughter, and she had garlic croutons on her mouth. And, I didn't kiss her mouth, but, like, it didn't bother me. So I do get caught fighting, and I hope to bring in some examples during this talk. So last night, my hubs. So I kept praying and trying to practice restraint of tongue and pen. So that's a big thing in step 10, restraint of tongue, pen, and I'm going to be honest, I have to add text, tongue, pen, and text. So we were at the dinner table, and we went out to dinner, and I should have gotten on my knees, reached out to a fellow, most importantly, gotten on my knees, asked God for help, reached out to a fellow, but I kind of felt trapped, and I felt really much better than him because he was looking at his phone, and I was like, oh, look at me, I'm sitting here, I'm so important, I'm, attending to my family, and I made a snide comment. I didn't practice restraint of tongue and pen, and my husband looked at me and left the table, and I was mortified. I was able to, because I know, the steps of step 10, I was able to make an amend, and I was able to do it in the wrong order. I didn't do a step 10 before I made it. I did it in my head. Clearly, I was wrong. I should not have said anything. I knew that. And what I did with my step 10 partner is I went back the next day to really learn what was going on for me. Because that's what I got to learn. Like, it's not about them. No matter who they are, this work is not about them. It's me. So I already said that. So hang on one second. For some reason, okay. So I want to go to the AA 12 and 12 because it has really changed a lot for me. So it talks about how we're in this new way of life. Can we stay sober, keep an emotional balance, live to good purpose under all conditions? And that we need to look at our assets and liabilities and have a real desire to learn and grow. Those are necessities for us. And so, that example that I provided for sitting at the dinner table, what am I going to grow? I need to grow my ability to shut my mouth. I need to grow my humility, remembering that I'm not God, and if my husband needs to be on his phone to do work for the job that he does that allows me to be a stay-at-home mom, like, who am I? Not that we can't have some eventual conversation about screen time, but not at the dinner table, not when he's taking us out to dinner. So it talks about A 12 and 12. It says no one, and it doesn't say just alkies. It says no one can make much of his life until self-searching becomes a regular habit. I need to admit and accept what I find, and until I patiently and persistently try to correct what is wrong. So one of the things that Step 10 does, it's shaped me as a parent. I can go back to my kids now and regularly do to say things like, Mommy was wrong to get mad. In fact, I did it this morning. Here I am preparing for a Sunday special edition, and we're staying at an Airbnb, and I just had this magnificent God-filled hookup, right? And so I go into the living room, and my children are carrying around these very fragile leaves. And I got on the face of evil to my kids. And I said my daughter's first name with her first and her middle name, and she started crying. And I had to say immediately, I made a mistake and I am sorry. So step 10 allows me to be a better mommy to these kids. Step 10 for me isn't about that I'm not going to make mistakes. It's that I am going to make mistakes. It's remembering that I don't want to fight today. As long as I can remember, I have fought others. And it's my ego and my fear, right? Like, I have a fear that you're not going to love me, right? Or I'm going to be rejected. And so anything that you do is evidence that I'm going to be rejected. So what was my fear with my daughters? Well, I was afraid that the Airbnb hosts would reject me or take me to court or, you know, lead me down a path that would take me to death. And I know that that sounds dramatic, but I'm going to tell you what, another blessed sister, when I do fear work with her in step 10, she keeps reminding me to ask, so then what? So what does that sound like? So I'm afraid that the Airbnb people are going to reject me. Okay, so they reject me. So then what? Well, then they're going to give a huge fine to my husband and I. So then what? Okay, so then my husband and I are going to be broke. So then what? My husband's going to leave me, and I'm going to get fat, ugly, be alone, lonely, and die. And that does sound dramatic, but when I'm seething with resentment, that is the kind of fear I have, and I'm fighting for my life. I want to go back to that point that I've always fought others. As long as I can remember, I went to the guidance counselor's office in elementary school. I was singled out with other girls who were not getting along. There's always been one girl in me fighting through early recovery. I can name people from high school, college. Actually, I can name two people from elementary school, my college, my master's degree that I had issues with. But today, because I do inventory, I can get back in touch with God about who I am, and God will change me. And how does that happen? The four steps of step 10, right? I need to watch, which a lot of times people will come to me and they'll say, well, I just don't get step 10s. I just, whatever. And I bring them to that first point. We need to watch. Right. So for me, watching means paying attention to my body, paying attention to my thinking. If I really want to know how my spiritual growth is, I just need to get on an OA meeting and hear how much talk is my head doing, right? Main problem is in my mind. I can be tearing people down if I'm not having a good spiritual hair day, right? So then I ask God to remove. I discuss it with someone immediately. If you feel like you can just do this work with God, that's fine. I'm not here to tell you otherwise. My experience, strength, and hope is to tell you that in step 5 of the AA 12 and 12, it says we find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. I also can't go to my sick mind for healing. So I do. I have a blessed step 10 partner. I work with my sponsors. I work with other wonderful friends who offer me what I call, or what I've heard to be called, spiritual considerations. So ways to get out of myself and pivot, right? Remember what I said in the beginning? It's not about what's happening to me. It's what God is doing for me. And then once I've done the 10, I get to be maximum. What does that mean? I need to go be of maximum service to God and those around me. When I'm fighting, I am not maximum. I'm way too focused on me. So I really need to throw myself harder into helping others. And I'll tell you what, I did step 10 for a long time, and I was like, well, I don't feel better. So therefore, I must go to 10 other people and find the right step 10. Notice it doesn't say that. It's I'm disconnected from God, I do the work, I make amends, and I help others, right? So the thing is, for me, that's acknowledging, like, well, two things. One, step 10 is not about feeling better. It's about feeling better. So a lot of times, step 10 brings me to snot-nosed, messy crying and being like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize I was fighting for my life again, right, with my husband or my children or a friend, right? I didn't realize that. And so then I get to sit with that. I mean, and so much of step 10 is about sitting and having that God consciousness. And how do I know it's God consciousness? For me, God consciousness is when it just flows, right? Like I ask a question and there's this answer like, yes, or nope, right? When it's me, I'm obsessed. It's like, so back to the 12 and 12. And I need to help others. If I say two things in this talk that you remember, I want you to remember God, because that's why we do the steps. I don't care if you call it Buddha, Allah, Jesus. It does not matter to me, but these steps are about, they are a treasure. They are a map to my relationship with God, right? The other thing I want you to hear is help others. God, help others. Those things are critical. Inventory is critical as well, because if I don't clear out the selfishness, self-centeredness, dishonesty, and fear, I can't get to God, and I really can't help others. So one of the coolest things that the AA 12 and 12 talks about is emotional hangovers, remember? So it's crazy, right? So we have our drunk hangovers. We have our food hangovers, which I had many of. They looked like aspartame poisoning from chewing so much gum when I was anorexic that I would, like, literally my belly would blow up. Or laxative hangovers, which I'm not going to describe, or food hangovers. Like, I remember being in college and waking up in the middle of the night with food in my mouth and just going and getting more. And then you wake up in the morning and you're in so much pain because your clothes don't fit. And I have to go to a men's store now to buy those pants that rub, you know, the rubbing between your legs. I mean, it's horrifying. And why is that important to remember? Because if I'm not growing and understanding in effectiveness, if I'm not maintaining the car of my spirit, eating is going to be a step up. So what are emotional hangovers? So emotional hangovers happen when drinking or not. They are the direct result of yesterday and sometimes today, today's excessive use of negative emotions. So anger, fear, jealousy, and the like. If I live serenely today and tomorrow, I certainly need to eliminate these hangovers. I've really struggled with emotional hangovers. But what I can say to you is that over the last, I've been in OA for 20 years, not abstinent that whole time. I've been free of flour and sugar for coming up on 10 years. But emotional hangovers have really changed for me. And I just want to talk about that. And the way they've changed is through step 10, is through repeated humiliation with my husband and others, and the final crushing blow of my self-sufficiency, which is a quote that does come from step 7. But as you know, if you've been doing the work for a while, all the steps are intertwined. And what step 10 also helps me to do is to see the character defects that are coming up. So I want to talk a little bit about past emotional hangovers. So one of the doozies for me, if you know me well, is that my husband doesn't communicate with me in the way I want him to, especially in the middle of the night. So I remember before he and I were married, he would travel. And we had, oh my gosh, I remember one particular day, we weren't even engaged, and I was furious because he was telling me he was traveling again, and that was unacceptable, right? I'm fighting again. So to finish that point, I apologize. I'm still a little nervous. So I was furious at him, and we fought so much that night that when I woke up the next morning, I couldn't think. My brain was foggy. I was emotionally hungover. Another way that the resentment of him not communicating with me on my terms was when he was gone, when he was traveling, and I would expect him, see, there you go, there are my expectations. Oh, KDG, you're so important. Your husband should call you, or your boyfriend should call you on your terms. And he wasn't calling me. And you know what I did? I slammed a pan. I slammed a pan. It got a dent in it. The next morning, you know, my sponsor is telling me that behavior is not acceptable. And if you're horrified, good, because that's who I am. I am so selfish that I slam pans. But I can tell you, if you're slamming a pan, in fact, if you slammed a pan last night, you're going to stop slamming pans. I promise, if you do this work. I had a profound mistrust of my husband when we first got married. I remember all the step 10s on him being friends with women at work. Like, holy smokes, you would think there was nothing to trust. And again, it's me, it's my issue. And thanks be to God, I don't have the kind of emotional outburst that I used to. I'll tell you another story. So I was very afraid, because it always starts with fear. Inventory always starts with fear. So at least for me, like, if you don't have fear, that's awesome. More power to you. I don't know what you're getting, but I have a lot of fear. So anyway, so I was afraid that I thought I was too stupid to do math and science. So therefore, I couldn't get a graduate degree. It started with this. I was too afraid to do math and science, so I had to be a sociology major. I was too afraid to be rejected from grad school, so I had to get a job as a manager. I was too afraid that a man would never marry me, so I had to get a job as a manager so I made enough money, right? So these are the decisions that I made. And what happened is I got 4 jobs with the same title, practice manager, and each and every time I was fired because I have no people skills. And part of my story, and I apologize, I haven't like literally given you a consistent example of my story, but when I came into the rooms, I was abstinent only for a very long time, and then I found the Big Book rooms. And in Boston, it's called Big Book Step Study. It's just another version of working the steps out of the book. And I remember I had gotten fired from my 4th job, and I started the Big Book. And I remember going in every day to that job because I had to finish it up, and getting on my knees and my sponsor holding my hands and praying for me and really having a psychic change around that. But the emotional outburst that I had with employees is gone. I don't do that today. Thanks be to God. My behavior has changed with frequency, intensity, and duration and severity. So when I do have anger, because I do, I immediately rectify the situation. I'm not perfect, so sometimes I do have to say, mommy got mad and I shouldn't have, and it can't be when my kids were old enough to like really speak English. And I was like, mommy is sorry, but you really shouldn't have done that. And if you're curious, that is not an amend. What I now say, even with like you know, a little tension in my teeth, I say, Mommy shouldn't have. I'm not perfect. I'm just not. And then, you know, sometimes I have to make the amend and then go do the work. I don't recommend that. I'm not saying that that's the way to do it, but I live a life. I can't do this perfectly. That's the other thing I wanted to say, not about perfection, but about the first step and of step 10 and watching, is that if you're new in step 10 and you're not getting step 10s, you're not seeing any, check every hour. Go to the bathroom every hour, get on your knees or bow or whatever your practice is, and say, ask yourself, where are you selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and afraid? And if nothing comes up, ask yourself, where am I smugly superior? Right? Like all those little judgments, those little, oh, I don't do that. I have a step 12. I have a step 12 program. Like, and if you don't think that, that's awesome. But I often do. So anyway, what else did I want to talk about? So guys, Hubs still does not communicate with me the way I want him to. But do you know what the difference is? He goes away all the time. I don't hear from him, and I'm fine. I don't expect him to, because I've done so many spot check inventories and then gone back and done a 4 through 9 and made amends and had that repeated humiliation of time after time after time of doing that same behavior and making amends, to the point where sponsors would say to me, you can't make amends anymore because he doesn't want to hear it, and an amends is changed behavior, me feeling so desperate, and then finally God steps in. And it starts to change. Another example that I wanted to talk about was my mom and her partner recently. Those led to significant emotional hangovers for me, significant outbursts, where the next day, because of that repeated inventory, I recently went to my niece's bat mitzvah. And the thing is, I have ducks. My family is a bunch of ducks, and I'm the one in 12-step recovery, which doesn't make me bad. I mean, make me better. It just makes me different. But I didn't lash out at anybody. There was nothing to be hung over about. I did a lot of step work. So I was able to have a peaceful vacation. Now, I did a lot of step 10s because internally there was stuff going on. I did not feel great being with my family the whole time. There's a lot of ducking going on, you know, a lot of, these are the people, not who made me an addict, but who gave me fundamental beliefs about food and body and exercise that I'm still praying to be free of. So back to inventory. Inventory requires an admission of and correction of errors now. Inventory enables us to settle with the past, so I get to immediately say, okay, I was wrong. When this is done, we are really able to leave it behind us. So one of my favorite things to remember is that the big book says, where can I find God? Deep down inside. When can I find God? Right now. So I need to leave this behind me. When my inventory is carefully taken and we've made peace with myself, the conviction follows that tomorrow's challenges can be met as they come. Another thing I wanted to share is that recently, and you know this from my shares, I'm an anorexic and bulimic as well, and one of my step 10 partners, like God love her, help me see that when step 10s come up repeatedly, a lot of times it's because 6 and 7 are starting to settle in. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. So I had 3 days in a row of resentments that had to do with body. But the way I function is it's never stuff with me, right? Like I had gotten on the phone with someone and they were telling me about something, and I judged them, and I was angry at them for their exercise and their body. And the next day, I got angry at my father for being doing his exercises. And then the day after that, I got angry at my husband for looking at his Apple Watch and being able to use his Apple Watch. These all came because I was so terrified that I was in an unhealthy body, that I was fat, that I, you know, all those disease thinking was coming. But what's great is that when I could see thematically it coming up 3 days in a row, I finally brought it to 6 and 7 and thought, okay, God, you need to change me. You need to help me, you know, be better with this. And I'm telling you, because of the questions that were asked by me from my amazing 10-step buddy, I've had a change. You know, like two women were saying to me, well, Katie, how do you know you're supposed to weigh in that 5-pound weight range? How do you know it's not supposed to be done? And one of the most powerful things that someone said to me is, I may not be as thin as I want to be, but maybe this is the weight God needs me to be at, to be a wife, to be a mom, to be a member in good standing of OA. And let's be honest, there's no weight that I'm satisfied by. I get down to 140, I want 130. I get down to 130, I want 120. I get down to 117, I want 100, because I have that disease of more. I wanted to share that, and I am realizing you're probably all getting tired of my talking, so I'm going to see how I can get this. Another line we can't not talk about. It's a spiritual axiom that when I am disturbed, it's about me and not the other person. If somebody hurts me, I am also in the wrong. And disturbed means like disturbing the flow of traffic, to throw into disorder. I got to tell you, my big book tells me I can be sober, considerate, and helpful regardless of what anyone says or does. And that's hard, because I live with people who are like me, spiritually developing, spiritually sick. But what does God tell me to do? Right? Love and tolerance of others is my code. So I don't get to be judging people for their outbursts or for whatever's going on with them. And sometimes other people may be wrong. Can I forgive them? Well, if I want forgiveness, I better be forgiving. So let's see. I gave that example. Other lies I tell myself when I'm angry at the kids. I think parenting should be easy. I project my insecurities on them of weight and food. I just want my kids to be little adults and make me feel good about myself, which is really not something that helps with good parenting. The 12 and 12 talks about how quick daily inventory is for my spot check analysis. I love this. It says one unkind tirade can ruin a relationship for a whole day or a whole year. And it's true. That night that I was so rude to my husband, he had to leave the table. And I'll tell you what, the rest of the evening, he was irritated, and he should have been. He had every right to be irritated. A couple things I like to remember, some spiritual shortcuts for me with step 10. Number one, when I get on my knees, and please don't be offended by me saying that. However, for me, when I say when I get on my knees, that's just me calling God in. So I apologize if I've been offensive saying that. All I mean is I'm calling God in. I made the decision that God was everything this morning. And so one of the quick ways, like if I'm in a place with the kids or hubs that I can't do an immediate step 10, I say to myself, is God everything or is nothing? Okay, well, if God is everything, then it's 2 a.m. and my child needs me. That's what I'm supposed to be doing, fitting myself to be of maximum service, continuing the maintenance, whether I want to or not. The second spiritual shortcut that I love is the ABCs. So remember in step 3, we admit, A, I am a food addict, compulsive eater, and I cannot manage my own life. Yeah, duh. B, no human power. What I feel like the most in step 10 is that I'm walking around, me and God, head in the clouds, feet on the ground, and then all of a sudden I see a human power. Money, prestige, I want to share, I want to buy, I want attention, I want love, I'm a please love me-aholic, and I get disturbed because I'm looking for a human power and not God to fill me. The final shortcut of step 10 that I love is St. Francis of Assisi. I shared that I think St. Francis of Assisi can solve all my problems. Being a channel of your peace, where there's hatred, let me sow love. where there's injury, pardon, where there's doubt, faith, where there's despair, hope, darkness, light. For it is in giving that we receive. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned. These are the tenets that I need to be practicing. So what's shocking to me right now is it's 9:15 and I haven't gotten down to any nuts and bolts. So I am going to take a few more minutes just to talk about some nuts and bolts of the AH, the big book. So we talked about how the directions, right? So in the big book, we ask God at once to remove it. We discuss it with someone immediately, make amends quickly. And then we make a resolution to turn my thoughts to someone who we can help. I make a resolution, God, how can I help? And I ask God, where would you have me go? What would you have me do? What would you have me say and to whom? The other thing I do, and I really make sure of this, is when I have asked God for help and I am discussing it with someone immediately, I say the sick man's prayer. God, please help me to see that this person is like me, spiritually developing. Help me to demonstrate the same kindliness, pity, and patience I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. And God, save me from being angry. And most importantly, how can I be helpful? One of my common misconceptions about step 10 is that I need to have a certain amount of inventories in order to be doing step 10s, or for me to, like, if I don't have any step, that I'm more spiritually fit. I don't think about that anymore, because for me, there are days when I have to do like 4 step 10s and I'm so close to God. And there are days that I don't think I have a step 10 and I'm really far from God. So there's no like quick fix solution. I can't ask you that. I can't answer that question if you have it, like, you know, the number of tens I should have. I want to continue to say this is about maintenance and growth and vigorously working to be in this new light, this new sunlight of the spirit. And yeah, I just want to say, I have had psychic changes with my mother-in-law, which I can tell you more about. And then the final piece I want to say is, you know, I do step 10s, but I don't always make the right decisions. So if you know me, I recently joined in the past 2 years a church. I loved everybody. I immediately got involved. I got involved very alcoholically. I wanted to be on every single panel, doing everything, being everyone. And then I started nursing this resentment that was like, I don't fit in. Nobody likes me. I don't fit in. Nobody likes me. I don't fit in. Nobody likes me. And I will tell you, in a state of recovered abstinence, I didn't fit in. Nobody liked me. And I left the church. And I just want to bring into account, and thanks for the person reminding me where this quote was. And it is actually in step 11, but I want us to remember what used to be the hunter, occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Awesome. Being still inexperienced, I've just made conscious contact with God, and it's not probable that I'm going to be inspired at all times. I might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. It was absurd. It's a beautiful church. It was absurd. And I had to do so many step 10s just to get back to the church. But I'm going to tell you what, I went back. I guess what I'm trying to say is, just because I'm living, doing the inventory, and I'm getting back into that beautiful rhythm with God, and I'm helping His kids, I make mistakes, right? Again, I make mistakes. But I was able to go back, and you know what I realized? And this was such a profound spiritual moment. Again, I realized it was all about me. There were all these people who welcomed me back with open arms. And I realized I did fit in. I was so desperately looking to where I would fit in that I missed the fact I fit in, because I was looking for human powers. So I don't know, friends. I think that's enough for me. I hope I've said something that's helpful. I'm sure you'll ask me lots of questions. I look forward, and I'm really, really grateful that I get to trudge with all of you. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so very much, Katie, for that very thorough walk along your journey of staying in that maintaining place and connected and tethered to God. Very instructive and very inspirational, just to be human. You know, we are oh so very, very human. Thank you. We're going to ask Katie for her contact information at the end of this meeting today after the recording has stopped. So stay with us for that. There's lots more to come and share with Katie. The share ID number for today, Sunday, April 21st, 2024, is the following: 21333. So the lines are now open for questions for Katie. If you have a question, please unmute your phone by pressing star 1 on your phone keypad. Offer your first name, the first letter of your last name, and your state. And then immediately upon asking your question, please press star 1 again to mute your line so it's nice and quiet for her answer. Who would like to ask a question this morning?
Janice M.
Chris M.
Janice M. and Chris M. Where are you ladies from?
Pennsylvania. Janice is in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Bonnie B. from Florida. Bonnie B., Florida.
Pete B.
Pete B.
This is Larry K. I'll jump in.
Larry K.
Tony B.
Tony B. That's a good lineup. Let's start there and see what we can mix up when we come back to it. Let's start with first with Janice M. from Pennsylvania, followed by Chris M., then Bonnie B., Pete B., Larry K., and Tony B. Hey, good morning, Janice M. Your question this morning for Katie.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks, Katie. Appreciate your share. I actually have two questions, if that's okay. The first one is, when you identify the smugness that you're feeling, I'm curious what your process is to get out of that. Second one is, I had a sponsee in the past who took her through the steps. She was ready to sponsor. So I was trying to give examples when I would ask her, you know, how you're feeling, any resentments today? No, I'm good. And I was trying to help her learn how to work through step 10. One, is that a big deal? I thought it was that she needed to know how to do the step 10 in order to sponsor and teach someone else. So I guess two questions around that is that important? And what do you do if you have a sponsee that says they have no resentments during the day? So the one is the smugness. Second one is about the sponsee who doesn't have any resentments during the day. Thanks.
Hey, thanks so much. I really appreciate you asking that question. Very thought-provoking. The first one, when I see myself as smugly superior, for me, that's a resentment. It may not be for other people, but I'm judging someone and I'm finding them not as good as me. So my selfishness is I want people to operate according to my demands. My self-seeking is I'm pissy, judging, and character assassinating. The lie is that I'm different and better than. The truth is I'm one among many. Like, I need something to bring me back to reality, which is there are no ladders here. We're all on the same playing field. Secondarily, you know, I would love to be a sponsor success story. I would love to, like, have, you know, a million and one sponsees that all have recovered and done things perfectly, and I don't. For me, you know, my experiences, I went right in and had lots of step 10s. I think as sponsors, my job is to put their hand in God's. If a sponsee came to me and was saying that, I would offer her the encouragement of looking every hour and considering what's going on for her. I would offer her the encouragement to talk to other people because the vision for you is so fellowship is so diverse and plentiful that I'm sure someone will have really good information. But I would try not to see it as a problem. If I saw it as a problem, I would do my own step 10 because for me, God meets us where we are. And maybe she just couldn't see it. And I don't know what I don't know. And I can't see what I can't see. So I can't punish her for where she is. Like, we're all on our own journey. So I would offer her that stuff and then let her have her journey with God. Like, maybe she is one of those people. that doesn't have any resentments. I'm sure somebody on this line is the same way and thinks I'm cuckoo for doing step 10s, but that's not my experience. So I would just encourage her to go to God, go to others, and focus, throw myself harder into helping others. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you very much, Janice M., for your question this morning from Pennsylvania. Chris M., your question this morning, where are you from? Chris, are you there, star one?
Can you hear me?
I can now. Yes, come right in. Where are you from, Chris? She might be having a little bit of difficulty.
Sorry,
let's
can
see
you hear
if
me?
She... Oh. I can. Can you hear us?
Yes. Sorry, I don't know what
okay.
happened.
Okay.
Okay. Thank
Your
you.
Your question, please.
Chris M. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ontario, Canada. So thanks, Katie. I was, thanks for your service. When you were talking about the emotional hangover, that really resonated with me. And that's sort of where I've been, what I've been sitting in, not the food. I've been remained abstinent, but so I'm working, just starting to work the steps again with a recovered sponsor. And like, what is, I guess what the difference, like when you're doing these regular step 10s, do you still experience any kind of like emotional hangover? Like, is there a difference between that and just the regular, like I'm human sort of feelings, like, you know, not being perfect, if that makes sense?
Sure. Yeah, for me, and again, this is just my experience, it might be different for you. When I'm in an emotional hangover, it's like a really big deal. It's because I have been so riddled with emotions and I have lashed out or have been so riddled with emotions that like I literally can't breathe, and the next day I can feel it or later I can feel it. My experience is, and maybe I'm wrong, I mean, my husband doesn't have emotional hangovers. So I can't say from a scientific perspective that humans outside of 12-step recovery don't do this, or that everybody, I can't say that everybody in these rooms does this or doesn't do it. But there is a difference. Like when I'm just doing a step 10, I don't know, like I guess I'm a little stumped, I think. What I can say is the emotional hangover part of step 10 has decreased with frequency, intensity, and duration. And that, you know, the step 10 can bring me to emotions that lead to emotional hangovers. But it just over time that has changed. And I want to also commend you for doing the steps again. I'm definitely a believer in doing the steps again or finding a fellowship in which a different fellowship in which you need to do the steps because we need to continue to grow. So I hope that was helpful. And if not, certainly call me.
Thank you very much, Chris, for your question this morning. Next up with a question is Bonnie B. from Florida. Then Pete will follow Bonnie.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Thanks for your service this morning, Melanie and Katie. I mean, you know, right? And I just, I adore you. The changes I've seen in you in the last couple of years are just unbelievable. And we're just going to say only God, and you gave him the credit for it. And I so appreciate that also. So here's my question to you. You know, at what point do you begin practicing step 10 with sponsors? Because, you know, there was one comment early on, and I agree, to feel like you're not equipped to do these is terrifying. And I felt like that initially. So I'm wondering, do you practice your step 10 with your sponsors prior, maybe to getting to step 10 once they're done with 4 or 5, or, you know, how do you do that? And thanks again for your service, dear.
Bonnie, do you mean sponsees, or when do I start doing the work with my sponsor?
So sorry, I muted. When you're sponsoring someone.
Oh, when I'm sponsoring someone. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so when I'm sponsoring, I don't, I know people do this differently, and I'm not going to get into different ways of doing it, whatever you want to do is awesome. I do start doing step 10s with sponsees when they're, after their first amend, because that's how I read the text. after their first amend, they start doing step 10s. And in the beginning, I spoon feed it. That's how I was taught in my local fellowship, is you learn step 10s by doing them. And I will spend a lot of time working with them. And if they've been with me on 4 through 9, it's really not that hard because it's the same inventory. It's just a little bit, it's the same inventory. So I work directly with them for a while. I also then encourage them to get a God squad. For me, what has been really helpful is I try the step 10s that are really crucial in my life, I do with my God squad because they know me. And I really want feedback from somebody who knows me. So I have my sponsor, and I really rely more on my sponsor for the nightly review, the summation of these are the 10s that came up in the day, and this is what I think I should be doing moving forward. So I really do wait until the sponsee has gotten to that point. I will say, though, as a caveat, I don't even follow that guidance because I have a sponsee right now. One of them, she was in the food, and I'm doing step 10s with her, and she's on step 2. I think it's really with sponsorship and with everything, I think I really try and meet people where they are. She was prepared to start doing them right away. That's helpful.
Thank you for the question this morning, Bonnie B. from Florida. Pete B., you're up next with the question.
Good morning, Melanie. Thank you for your share with Katie. Thank you so much for your presentation. Thanks for your use of the dictionary and your reference to the AA 12 and 12, which I find super helpful. Could you share, how does making an apology for someone you hurt, how does that repair the damage that we've done?
Yeah, it's an awesome question. It doesn't. I mean, that's why I was told after a really long time, after a while, not to make amends to my husband, because an amend means to change. So a lot of times I see in your question, I probably said that I apologize a lot because I do. I think that one of the things that I'm working on is that apology sometimes, and I did this with a fellow who called me the other day. She really wanted to apologize, and I said, but what does harm mean, right? Like, have you really done harm? And if so, if I haven't, a lot of times I'm apologizing, Pete, probably to your point, to feel better. I guess for me, it is important as a mom to model to my kids that if I make a mistake again, which I will, that I was wrong and I want to promptly admit it. But I think, you know, to your point, perhaps I need to change, and that's where step 6 and 7 come in. For me, though, Pete, there is something important about acknowledging what the behavior was. And that's what I have.
Can I just ask a follow-up?
Sure.
But it uses the word amend. The word amend and amends are different words. So we're not being asked to change. We're being asked to fix, to repair, right? I mean,
yeah. So, Pete, why don't you help me understand by clarifying your point? Because I'm not
following. My question. So my point is, I'm asking for clarification. The word amend means to change. The word amends means to repair, right? So isn't there we're being asked to repair the damage from the harm that we've caused?
Yeah, so my answer to you is exactly what I said. So I would apologize because I think a prompt admission of the harm that I've done is part of the repair process. Because if I'm not willing to admit that I was wrong, then I'm not, right? Like, I need to give people back their reality. If I scream at you and I'm not going to acknowledge it, then you could live in a reality that I didn't scream at you. You know, you would be like, oh, well, she must have not screamed at me or something. So I believe that part of doing the repair work is acknowledging that I did something wrong.
Got it.
And then
so thank you so much, Kate. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. It's too much.
No, no, that's fine. Nope, you're good.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Bye.
Thank you, Pete B, for your question this morning. Larry K, your question for Katie, followed by Tony.
Thanks, Mel. Thanks for your service. And thanks, Katie. I can really identify in with you. Boy, you know what? If you were perfect, I wouldn't be able to identify with you, but thank goodness you're someone in recovery like me that is just woefully imperfect, just trying to do the best we can. So I really appreciate that. Now, with that long diatribe, let me ask this question. So just presuming there's like, because I think you did a great job of this. You know, I think of like, you know, young mothers out there that are maybe, you know, brand new to program. And I think there's a lot of, this would be my guess, because I don't have young children anymore. Just this whole notion I'll call it the depleted mother syndrome, you know? And so with that in mind, and you alluded to some of that, you know, just constantly like a pinball with all that stuff. How have you, you know, used your program over the years, especially the more recent years, you know, just speaking to offer some further hope than you already did, which you have, to those young mothers like, how in the heck am I going to even do this? I don't even, you know, I don't even know how I'm going to. Does that make sense, Katie, where I'm headed with that question?
Yeah, it does, Larry.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. What a creative question, and just grateful for it. So a lot of people ask me, like, how do you have time to work program? And I'm not trying to be sassy, but I don't have time not to work program. And yet there are requirements as a mom. When I first came into the rooms, I had no one and nothing. What a surprise. No one wanted to be with me because I was just a porcupine. So anyway, over the years, I've taken on, as you guys know, I've taken on a lot of service. And in the beginning of my older daughter's life, that was okay. And I felt really good about it. And then as I continued, and as she morphed from like a little baby to a human, and then I had another human, I've had to take a huge step back from service and realize that the most important service that I do is sitting one-on-one with a sponsee. It just is. Like that's, and as a mom of young kids, I have to remind myself that there are lots of people in our meeting that do lots of service who are moms, but their kids are older. And I want to do what they do. I have to do step 10s around it sometimes, but I just can't because that's not a reality. And so, my kids know that I'm in recovery. They know that I get on meetings. I can't be the be-all and end-all with my kids all the time. They have to learn that mommy's on the phone. I mean, if they need me when I'm on the phone, and if you're a sponsee of mine, you know that I will interrupt our talk when my kids need me because they need to know that they're a priority. I don't want them growing up thinking that my program or the program is in front of them. But I also, they need to know I have a program of recovery. So for example, it also means really good communication with my hubs. I don't inform my husband when I do service. I ask permission because it means that he's going to have to be on parenting. And so, you know, if you're really struggling, the final thing again, remember all the time you spent exercising, throwing up, or binging? Take that time and work your recovery program. We have the time. You have the time. I have the time to do what my priorities are. I will make the time to do what my priorities are. I will. I hope that answers your question, Larry.
It totally does. Thanks, Katie.
Cool. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Larry. Yeah, Larry from Illinois, Larry K. I think next up is it Toby B or Tony B?
Hello, it's Tony B from Scotland. Hi.
Hi, Tony.
Thank you. Thank you for moderating, and thank you so much, Katie. It was such a wonderful share and so much relation that I got with the emotional hangovers, the going to the extremes, and how that's beginning to settle down. I hear it in you. I'm experiencing it beginning to happen. So grateful for everything that you shared. My question is, you talked about repeated humiliation of doing the same behavior, and then you said that finally God's changed and change comes. I wonder, is there a bit in between that humiliation and then the change coming? Could you talk a bit about that? I would be grateful if you could. And the other thing was around your family. I didn't understand what ducking was. If you could let me know, that would be great.
Yeah, I'll answer that. I wasn't sure about that because it came off wrong. What I was trying to do is say that my whole family has eating issues, and I'm not here to diagnose them. What I meant is that, like, my parents have eating disorders, I have eating disorders, we all suffer, and that there's a phrase, ducks have ducks. So they were acting, in my opinion, they were acting out in ways that were disordered with eating. So thank you for that question. I think it's all a process. It wasn't a switch for me at all. And it's a softening. Every time I've gone through the steps, I've softened more and seen where I need to control less. And the more I do that work, the fear starts to go away. So it's definitely never been a switch. It's just been a process. And I can tell you the process of working on this talk, which was a spiritual awakening, I remember calling a friend and saying, you know what, I don't have these emotional hangovers. So I'm like the last to know. You know, there was a period of time when I was doing in vitro fertilization and I was on hormones like nobody's business. I remember screaming and yelling at my husband because he wanted to make not organic hamburger or something. And there is no reason to scream at anybody about making the wrong kind of meat. But man, I was fighting. So it's things like that just don't happen anymore. But again, it takes time. And the other thing is, like, God is going to decide. And I don't mean to rest on my laurels. Like, I'm one of those people that, you know, there's a fellow on here who says, you know, bite your tongue until it bleeds. Like, I when I'm struggling with a character defect, I will call. I mean, obviously I'm praying. Right, I'm praying for people and talking to God about it. And then I'm asking for God with skin on. Like, I'm talking to God, and how do you figure this out when your husband does this? Or I'm talking to mommies. How do you do this? How do you live in recovery like this? I don't get it for people who are working or people. One of the things I find really important is to talk to people who are restrictors, who are exercise bulimics, because I need to know, like, what do you do in this situation? How do you handle it? But that doesn't mean the behavior changes right away. It's God's work. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you very much, Tony B. from Scotland. Hey, I think we have time for a question, one more or two, this morning before we need to call an end to this beautiful time together. Anybody out there want to have a question for Katie? Carol W.
Yeah. Mary C.
Mary C. Let's try those two and see what happens, and then we can swing back around. Carol W., your question, and where are you from?
I am from Tulsa, and thank you both so much. Katie, I identify with how this disease has manifested in you in every aspect. So I'm living in a state of recovery and have ceased biting anyone or anything. That said, I screamed at my husband the other day because I thought he was going to get us in a wreck. It's happened three times. I The only thing
Wait, you thought he was going to what? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I thought he was going to get us in a wreck.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And the only thing I can compare it to is when I was a young mother like you and a child running in the street. So third time I've done it, it's truly annoying to him. Have I harmed him? You might have already answered this. Have I harmed him? Gosh, I want to quit this. So I went to God and said, how do I fix this? I'm wrong to scream. But if you have any suggestions for that young mom, a kid running in, I feel like I still needed to say, I'm sorry. This is, I really thought we were about to have a wreck. I apologize. But if you, I mean, I can't control it. And I want to make amends and repair it. But I feel like I'm going back for the same thing every time. And I am not fixing. I mean, I'm in the wrong. We weren't about to have a wreck. My eyes are going. And he's 70 and I'm almost 64. So any tips you have on what you would do in that situation, how you would make amends when you know you've gone to God and figure, I'm not perfect, it's probably going to happen again.
Yeah, I mean, we're married to the same man. My husband is, I get very nervous. I always have driving with my husband. But one of the ways in general that I try and, you know, abate that is I'll make a joke about it. Like, he has a lot of opinions about other people's driving. And so I'll say, wow, I really... you know, people are just not following the rules of, you know, my driving manual. So I try and kind of lighten things up. There are times that I've screamed and he's gotten mad and I've just said, I apologize for screaming. I got scared. I mean, that's just like a normal human response. And then what I would work on is my own breath. Like when I just love this idea that God is as close as the breath. So if I'm in a situation and I'm having fear, like one hand over my heart, the other hand over my belly, and work on my breathing. Because you're going to see what you look for. Like if you're afraid that he's going to mess up driving, then you're going to see it. Now, having said that, if your husband needs to stop driving because of his age or his eyes or things like that, that might be a conversation you want to have with him offline when not driving. Like,
yeah.
Hey, I love you, and I'm really starting to get concerned about your driving. That's within your jurisdiction or whatever to talk to him, but I would not talk to him about that when you're on the road. Does that answer your question?
I love this. Oh, the breathing is wonderful, and he's 70 and never had a wreck. It's my theory.
Oh, there you go.
So thank you so much. I appreciate the breathing tip.
Thank you. God bless.
Thank you for the question this morning. Cheryl W. from Oklahoma. Mary C., your question this morning for Katie.
Hi, Mary C., compulsive overeater. Katie, thank you so much for your share. It was absolutely fabulous. My question is, okay, I'm on this 10-11 step train, and is it okay to combine a 10 and 11 step together? Have you ever done that? And is that okay?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't answer that question. I'm not familiar with that. I'm not familiar with that. And you know what? I would really encourage you to remember that the realm of the spirit is not right and wrong. The whole point of this work is to get us to God. So there's no legalism here. You know, if doing them combined gets you to God, I say awesome. If doing them separately gets you to God, I say awesome. I mean, I don't make the rules. So I think it's about really honestly asking yourself. And for me, being open too. Like, if that's what you're doing and today you've heard something different, try something different. See what happens. But don't start thinking what you're doing is wrong, right? That's the problem, is I think that there's a right and a wrong. In the spiritual world, I'm not finding things right and wrong.
Thanks so much for your question this morning, Mary C. Didn't catch where she was from. Hey, I think we have time for at least one more question this morning. Time is being generous to us today. Press star one if you'd like to have a question. The last burning question for Katie, perhaps.
Vanessa G.
Okay, it's yours, Vanessa. Let's go. Your question, please. And where are you from?
From New Mexico. I'm a compulsive overeater recovered in New Mexico. Hey, Katie. So good to hear you today. I think you know that when I first came to Vision, you were one of those, you know, strong, passionate voices that first attracted me here. And I've just been really blessed to hear, you know, so much of your inner viewpoint this morning. I have a question, I guess, maybe about step 10s. I think what I heard you say today, that step 10 wasn't so much about managing my feelings or my emotions, you know, changing those, as it is changing my perspective, my viewpoint, you know, making it more spiritual, I guess. Is that what I heard, do you think?
I can't manage my emotions. For me, step 10 is I pivot from that thinking, like, what is happening that, you know, my kids are doing this to me, right? They're interrupting me when I'm on my Vision for You meeting, and that's happening to me versus is it happening for me, right? This isn't my time. God is calling me. I'm a mommy. God doesn't want me on Vision for You right now. God doesn't want me serving. God wants me here. So I think it depends on the step 10. But again, I get nervous hearing you say managing emotions. I think there's like a surrender to what's underneath there. Absolutely. And then in terms of like accepting what's happening, that it's happening for me, you know, whatever is happening, what can I learn? Where can I grow? Does that answer your question?
I think so. I think you might have misunderstood the beginning of it. I guess when you said ends aren't about feeling better or maybe.
Oh, yeah. So in terms of, yeah. So, yeah, I always thought step 10 would make me feel better, like that I would walk away, you know, with unicorns and rainbows. But a lot of times it really just brings me to that fear that I can feel between my teeth. And then I go to God again and I help others. And then slowly for me, fear doesn't leave very fast. For me, I have to learn to sit with it and be with it. Is that more what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think that's what I heard you say. And I think I agree with that. I mean, they don't necessarily make me feel better, but they make me see better. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand what you're saying. That makes a lot of sense. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Vanessa, for your question this morning. That's going to be the last one today. A great, great time together with you, Katie. Wonderful. Very supportive for those that were asking questions. You offered so much of yourself and your time. And, yeah, very vulnerable. Appreciate that very much. So it is time to close, and we'll close within our usual fashion here at A Vision for You by reading from the book, The Big Book, on page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you